Hi there. Sorry to interrupt. A quick question. What do you get when you combine ground engineering and satellite remote sensing expertise? The answer is Geofem, where satellite data means your technical insight. Why not ask us a question at geofem.com?
Welcome back, I hope, to the Breaking Ground podcast. Today I'm joined by Skevi Perdicu from Geofem. Geofem, of course, are our new sponsors. Thank you so much, Skevi, for your support of the podcast and welcome on. It's going to be great to hear more about your business. So, hi, and I think you're joining us from Cyprus today, aren't you?
Yes, thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here with you today, and I hope you find some interesting information about us.
Yeah, I'm intrigued. I think you're a little different to most consulting businesses in terms of some of the services that you offer. I'm not even sure that you would label yourself as a consultant, because a lot of the work of Geofem is investigation, really, isn't it? So the name, I presume, Geofem comes from the fem being finite element modeling and the geo. Well, I guess we can all guess that. maybe you could tell us a little bit about how it was formed and how it's developed over coming up to 20 years now, the business.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the company was established in 2007. And it started originally as a geotechnical engineering consultancy, so offering advanced geotechnical engineering, mainly concentrating on finite element modeling. Until about 6 years ago, when we started developing the satellite remote sensing part of the business. Most people, when they first hear geotechnical and satellite remote sensing, they think, well, how can these two different disciplines sort of work together? But actually, they work very well together, and that's quite, I would say, unique. But that's what characterizes our company, and that's what differentiates us from others, because we use geotechnical engineering and finite element modeling for predicting ground displacements, and satellite remote sensing for measuring and monitoring infrastructure and measuring displacements. But it's not only that. We use our expertise and our knowledge and understanding about the ground and the infrastructure for providing interpretation and assessment of outputs of satellite technology.
Okay.
So, yes, so we use these two disciplines together to assess geohazard susceptibility to our infrastructure.
That's a great summary of what you do. I think you'd probably be too modest to say that your investment in these new technologies seemed to coincide with your personal joining of the business, because that was 6 years ago. And well, tell us a little bit about your history, because you spent a lot of time in the UK at universities.
And, yes.
If you could maybe just explain briefly what your postgraduate studies were about.
Yes, that's correct. I studied civil engineering as my first degree, and then I did master's in geotechnical engineering in London. And then I continued with a PhD in satellite remote sensing at the University of Southampton, the UK.
Okay.
So that's how I started, combining this civil engineering background, geotechnical, with the satellite remote sensing. And I spent after that a few years in the UK working as a geotechnical engineer before moving to Cyprus. And at the first years, I worked in the industry as a geotechnical engineer, and then in academia, where I worked as an assistant professor teaching in the civil engineering department and the satellite remote sensing.
Okay.
So that's where the applications of satellite remote sensing came for the civil engineering sector. And through these years, I started getting involved with the European Space Agency, because it was during these times that Cyprus tried to become a member of the European Space Agency. So I got involved heavily in the satellite remote sensing, and then I left academia to join GeoFM about 6 years ago. And now I'm the technology manager at the company, where I developed a lot the satellite remote sensing part of the business, leading both commercial and a lot of innovation projects funded by various sources.
It was Southampton, wasn't it, the PhD? Yes. Were they a centre of excellence for remote sensing anyways, or did you bring it on?
Yes, yes. Not at Southampton. At Southampton, I was in the civil engineering department, but I attended a lot of, let's say, lectures in the geography department, because it's a discipline that covers a lot of different areas. So I was still part of the civil engineer, so I never left the geotechnical or civil engineering background. It was always there. So, but yes, it uses a lot of different sciences.
Well, there's a term that I've seen over the years plenty of times and not really understood much about it at all, and hopefully you can enlighten me, which is, I've seen the initials GIS, Geographic Information Systems. So that was clearly a big part of what you do, and then you're using the technologies within the business to gather that information. Is that right?
Not exactly. GIS is a way of presenting the results.
Okay.
You know, through the geographical information systems, where everything comes together. So all information can be presented geographically and correlated together for easy understanding of the outputs. So when we process some data through satellite image analysis, all these are correlated to the environment. So you can overlay your outputs on a map, so you know where you are, what the surroundings are, what the environmental conditions are, because a lot of the time everything is affected by the landscape, by the, you know, landslides. You need to see where you are in relation to the urban environment. So it all helps to present the outputs in a GIS environment.
Okay, so the GIS is the output. A lot of the work that you do is the input.
Yes, the outputs from from the satellite analysis is then used on a GIS environment.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So let's look at the satellite work, because when we were having a conversation about this in the build up to the podcast, I was really intrigued when we were talking about the degree of accuracy that satellites can produce. And I suppose we've all seen those films, haven't we, when the satellites are looking through the windows of a building harbouring a terrorist, and we're all captivated by that thought. But you know, to actually use it as an engineering tool, when if you take your EDM, if you're onto a site, and you've still got a degree of accuracy of like 10 mil, you're explaining that you can get a better degree of accuracy potentially from the satellite technology. Can you tell us a little bit more about how effective it is, and maybe some of the limitations as well? Because it's not a perfect system by any means, is it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, it has limitations like any other system. So everything has advantages and disadvantages, but it is amazing that, using satellite technology, you can get such high accuracy of information. So what we are using, apart from the optical satellite images that we are most familiar with, we are also using satellite radar data, which have the advantage of penetrating the clouds because they operate in the microwave portion of the electromagnetic spectrum. So that's a great advantage because it means you get data under any weather conditions.
Okay.
Even in the UK, which is covered by clouds most of the time.
Yeah, yeah. So, quite the same as Cyprus.
Yes.
Yeah, so, but But still to the same degree of accuracy, it won't affect the quality.
No, exactly. So we account in the processing for the different atmospheric conditions, but even when you have cloud coverage, you still get high accuracy of data. So what we do, we analyze and process the data. If you have a large data set, then you process the data and then you can measure displacements with an accuracy between 2 and 4 millimeters as a technology.
Is it essentially a topographical survey? Is that the way it's working? The data that you're getting back is telling you about the height of the ground, or
what it tells you is the movement of the ground between successive passes.
Okay.
So, for example, you use a large data set with different images of successive passes. So, what it gives you is the relative movement for each date of the images acquired in your data set compared to the first image. So your first image is always your zero. So you start measuring from the first image in your data set. So if you have an analysis over a two-year period, you will know how much your ground or infrastructure has moved compared to this first date. So it's a tool that measures ground and infrastructure displacements.
Okay. Yeah, but you're measuring it.
Yes, you measure the displacements. So you would not measure, let's say, the accurate topography for aligning, building something. So this is not the purpose of that. It's for monitoring the condition of your infrastructure assets and your ground. And that's also very important because you can measure displacements before they even become apparent to the human eye.
Yeah.
So you can. That's very important in engineering because, proactive maintenance is always more economical than, after something happens.
It's not like some geophysics tools where you could tell about the strength of the ground or the moisture content, for instance.
You are mentioning moisture content. Yeah. That's a different.
That's a different tool that you got. Okay.
Okay. The displacement I mentioned is measured via phase difference between the successive passes. You can get other information from radar satellites.
Okay.
If you take you make use of the signal, using for example of what. We have developed at Geofem an algorithm for measuring soil moisture.
Okay.
This is surficial volumetric soil moisture content, which is a very important, and we combine it with the displacement data for assessing the condition of the ground. So that's the two most important information, or two of the most important information for assessing the condition.
So particularly for something like landslips.
Yes, combining this information would give you very useful information. Yeah. So this is this is an example of the innovation when we do at Geofem.
Yeah. If we take the example of landslips, at what point do you need to make an intervention? I'm just thinking if it's moved... the land's moved by 10 millimeters, for instance, how long have you got before the whole cliff's going to collapse, or you're going to get a slip circle failure? Is there enough time to intervene and stop potential disasters? Because if the sort of degree of accuracy is what did we say? 3 to 4 mil?
2 to 4 millimeters okay. Technology.
Yeah,
yes.
So you've got to be looking at sort of in the order of at least 10 mil movement before you could be confident that it was it was not to do with the degree of accuracy of the equipment. But at 10 mil movement, is it already too late or not? Are we looking at this more potentially as a retrospective tool, or is it something where you are actually seeing interventions on the ground and people being moved out of their homes, for instance?
Yes. So how it works, when I said 2 to 4 millimeters, by looking at data retrospectively, you see the trends that develop. are developing over time. So even the rate of movement, even if it's smaller than the 10 ml you mentioned, even if it's something moving slowly at 5 millimeters per year, let's say, if you look at the data retrospectively, you can see the trends that have been developing over time. So you can identify slow-moving landslides. Regarding the what you mentioned about is there enough time and all that, so what we are developing is by working closely with our clients to develop these early warning systems for areas that are susceptible to geohazards. So we have developed a geohazard susceptibility assessment to landslides, swelling clays, sinkholes. So for landslides, we use artificial intelligence and satellite-derived information, all putting this information together to be able to identify which areas are highly susceptible. In that way, the clients have this information before the occurrence of the landslide. So it's a very important information, especially with regards to climate change, because most landslides are triggered by rainfall. So having this information, this is very important, because you can update such maps regularly to show the impact of climate change or like rainy season. So at the end of each rainy season, you can update your map and you know which new areas have been affected.
Yeah, and obviously with climate change, we're going to see an increased use of this technology. Yes. You mentioned the European Space Agency there. I presume they're funded by the European Union or a collection of European countries, at least. So they must have an interest in the application of this technology for the benefit of the people in our countries. So do they provide that information to you for free, or is that something that you have to have a commercial arrangement? And could other people listening to this podcast phone up the or go onto their website and download that data? How privileged is that?
We work closely with the European Space Agency, as I mentioned. We're doing a lot of projects with them, but they have a lot of information available and available freely for anyone to use. Yes, a lot of information available for anyone. What we offer is the processing of the data, not only the freely available data by the European Space Agency. We also use commercial data if required by a project. But yes, the data is there, and it's so much data available. And I believe, you know, as the years go by, more and more data becoming always available for different applications. So it's a lot of information out there.
Okay, so if we went on their website, what would we see? Would it be like Google Earth, or would it actually be, say, you've just seen a picture and I can zoom in on my house, or would we get something that's more sort of numbers and grids? What's the output?
Behind, I always say behind pretty pictures are always numbers. So even the optical images that we are all more used to, like Google Earth, as you said, there are numbers behind these satellite images, both optical and radar. The radar are more complicated in the sense that they don't look like an image. When you see a raw radar satellite image, it doesn't look like an image at all that we're all used to, because it's not in the visible spectrum, it's in the microwave spectrum. So you need to process it to make sense of it, to make the displacement or to convert the useful information into something useful. But going back to the European Space Agency, as you said, it's also optical data available, not only radar. So you can select what type of information you would like to see, and you can download and process the data.
Would that would all be satellite data anyway, wouldn't it, that they get?
Yes.
But I think in the past it would have been largely American satellites as opposed to the European satellites that they would use.
The difference, the Google Earth is still a satellite-derived information.
Let's have a chat about some of the projects then that you've been involved with, because I think that would be really meaningful to our listeners to learn about the type of applications, because you work all over the world. Although you're based in Cyprus, your customers are in the UK and Asia and America. Maybe we'll start in the UK, as it's close to my home at least. There's a project that you were involved in Glasgow, and I noticed it was actually Tensar, who had previously been on the podcast, that engaged you on that scheme. It was a road scheme, and you're looking at the stabilisation of an embankment. Could you explain how the technology was applied there, and how involved GFM were in the design process and analysis?
Yes, so one of these projects that you mentioned in Glasgow was about an embankment, monitoring an embankment. So we were involved actually in both the finite element modeling for the prediction of the settlements on the embankment. The geological conditions of the embankment were quite challenging, and it was also peat pockets on the ground. The geological conditions were quite poor, so we predicted different scenarios using finite element modeling, what the settlements would be, after the construction. So, and over the years. So using the satellite technology, we monitored the different sections along the embankment that was built in two phases in order to be able to see the development of the settlements and whether they were acceptable within the expected limits, or whether there were any problems with the site to be able to act quickly. So that was very good, because we provided updated information at regular intervals. At the beginning, we were also comparing with in situ instrumentation, but at some point the in situ instrumentation stopped working properly. So we kept monitoring over a long time with updated information, and this was very significant, because we were able to confirm that the movements were within the expected settlements as predicted by the finite element modeling. So that's what I meant at the beginning about providing also geotechnical interpretation, because the client wants to know at the end of the day, do I need to do anything about the site, or is it is it performing as expected?
Yeah. So you came up with the design using the FE model, and then just checked that it was indeed working effectively through the satellite work. What if it didn't? What was, because it's not like, so when we do pile designs, or quite often we'll have a low factor of safety, but we'll do expendable load testing in advance, so we'll know it's going to perform. And there's other geotechnical examples of that sort of approach. But it seemed like you were perhaps using technology that was quite cutting edge in this process. So was there a fallback in terms of, if the design hadn't been effective, what would you have had to do? Would it have been sort of regrading? No, that would be more with Tensar than yourselves, but was that ever a discussion?
We never had, thank God, such a problem, but I guess the purpose of monitoring in general, it's to be able to have time to act. So you see the trends developing, and you can see when it comes to a point as an engineer that you assess it. By assessing it, you can see that this provides higher increasing risk, then you need to inform the client and take action. So this is the purpose of being able to provide an early warning, or assess the condition to be able to judge, is this acceptable or not?
Yeah.
So it's to be able to give you time to do something about it. That's the purpose of monitoring in general.
Yeah. Were you able to perhaps phase it? It looked like a big scheme. Were you able to sort of put in part of it and look at the the monitoring, or is the monitoring over such a long period of time that it's only really a retrospective analysis? I'm just thinking when you could like have a sample size to see how effective the design and installation process has been.
So actually this we started monitoring straight after the completion of the works, but you need to know that for this method using satellite data you need a minimum of 20 images to be able to process the data. So you have this time, you know, before you start receiving information. But we had the in situ instrumentation in place. We started straight away after the 20 images were collected, which was, I think, just a few months after the completion of the works. So, yes, you get, by updating the data, you can see how the movements are developing over time. So, so this wasn't a problem. It wasn't after everything went well, yeah. Let's monitor it. It was because the settlements are happening over time as well. So you need to see how, especially in these poor ground conditions.
Mm. And what sort of levels of movement did you see on this scheme?
The rate of movement was, I think the velocity was about, if I remember correctly, 20 to 30 millimeters per year or a bit more.
Okay. But I suppose really it's the rate of change once it settles down and you can be confident.
Yes, as the time goes by, we could see that this was moving towards stabilization.
Yeah.
So the important thing is to know, you know, in respect to the timing, as you move along, is this trending towards stabilization or is it increasing or staying like this? Yeah. So that's why it's very important to have this understanding of what you see.
Yeah. And within the finite element model itself, I don't know, do you use Plaxis or is it similar?
Yes, we use Plaxis, yeah. Yes, that's correct.
Well, let's come a bit closer to your home rather than mine for the next one, which is about the City of Dreams, which sounds amazing. Have you been in Limassol?
Unfortunately, not yet.
It's a big resort, combination of hotels and villas and shopping areas and leisure areas. The ground, though, had a lot of challenges when you were presented with the project. Can you explain a little bit about some of the issues with the ground?
Yes, the ground there, I mean, there was a very shallow groundwater table. And I think the area was, if I remember correctly, suffering from expansive clays. So originally the solution proposed was for excavating huge amounts of the ground and replacing them with appropriate material, which was going to be very expensive for the client.
This wasn't under the buildings, this was more in the landscaped areas, is it?
Yes, more because I think buildings were on piles anyway. So
okay.
This was for the swimming pool areas because it was a huge area covered by swimming pools and all this very, very extensively. So what we did, we instructed extensive site investigation information to assess the expansive clay. And also we did satellite image analysis to see retrospectively the seasonality in the ground movements due to the expansive clays. So combining additional information from the site investigation, which assessed how expansive the clay was, and actual information from the monitoring allowed us to provide a much more economical solution to the client, rather than the original purpose, which was substituting such big amounts of ground. So that was reducing significantly the construction cost, I think by more than 300,000. And also time, you know, saving a lot of time, carbon footprint associated with all that construction work. So it was a very beneficial analysis.
Yeah, well, the last podcast was about the observational method, and it feels a little bit like it's connected to that in terms of you're looking at the amount of movement, because I suppose you did have a bit more time because this was soft earth earthworks, you had time to respond to how the ground was performing, really understand it before actually putting concrete in the ground and building the swimming pool and so on.
Yeah, we did analysis retrospectively. So using the freely available data from the European Space Agency, which is available since 2015, we were able within a very quick period of time to analyze the retrospective data, which showed us a history of many years of seasonal changes on the ground.
That was a very
fast response in that by analyzing historical data that, this is the great beauty of this technology. If you don't have in situ instrumentation and you have the historical data from the satellites, you can get an idea of the condition of the ground without waiting.
Yeah. And for like you say, because you can go back through so many years and you know how the moisture is going to affect the ground and the hot summers and so on.
Yes.
Yeah. You don't need to look forward. You've already got that information there.
And you don't need to wait a long time for collecting the information. Plus, yeah, the benefit is that you have wide coverage with the satellite data. So you can assess large areas instead of the localized information you get from the sensors. The sensors can help you in identifying where you should put them. But with the satellite technology, you have this wide coverage.
Yeah. And how long is it kept for? Is there a period of time because this must take up huge spaces on hard disk somewhere. is that the same?
Yes, data is archived. There's data since much before 2015 from different sensors. So you can get access to archive historical data. These days with technology and, this cloud computing and all this information is archived and you can analyze it quite easily, I would say.
Okay, if you're an expert.
you need the infrastructure to support all this huge amount of data.
Yeah.
But data is out there, yes.
Yeah. Do you need specialist software to draw that down?
Yeah, you need specialist data to process the data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To process it, definitely, yes.
Let's look at a nice civil engineering project now. New South Wales. I said you cover all over the world, certainly the other side of the world from us. I've got to say that one of the most spectacular civil engineering pictures I've seen on the case study for that beautiful S-shaped road going around the coastline there in New South Wales. What was the challenges on that particular scheme? Why did the client get you involved?
So that was a very challenging project because there was about damages on existing bridges, and there was a new bridge being constructed adjacent to these two new bridges. So we needed to investigate whether these damages pre-existed the construction of the new bridge. So there was no other way of assessing that because there was no in situ instrumentation on those two bridges. So what we did, we looked at historical satellite data before the construction of the new third bridge. And by analyzing those data, we found that there was seasonal displacements on the abandonments of those two bridges long before the start of the construction of the third bridge. So these seasonal displacements were due to the geological conditions of the ground. The area was characterized by expansive clays. So this information was useful because this was could have been one of the reasons for causing these cracking and differential settlements on the existing bridges. So this is a clear example of assessing infrastructure when you don't have any other information. Looking at satellite data, you can have this information and assess the trends have been developing over time.
So that was the purpose of the new road bridge was to replace one that had been damaged then by the soil movement.
I'm not sure about replacing, but the client wanted to investigate whether the damages had anything to do with the new bridge,
yeah,
or where they pre-existed.
Okay.
To the new bridge.
And so you went back through the history and looked at how much, if anything, had moved. Yes. and how much had it moved?
Yes, so this could provide information, let's say, for forensic investigations or when you want to assess the causes of damages.
Yeah, and in this particular case, it was that the movement had occurred prior to the installation of the new bridge.
New bridge, yeah. Exactly,
yeah.
Yes. So
okay.
They were pre-existing deformations.
Yeah, because one of the services I noticed that you offered was forensic analysis. So it's exactly this sort of
yes.
situation that your expertise comes and technology comes in handy. So the old bridge, was that made, that was made redundant by the new bridge, given that it was on the move, presumably?
I don't know about the redundant.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the moves were extraordinary. It's just that these differential settlements pre-existed due to the, and you could see clearly the seasonality, which is characteristic of the expansive clays.
Yeah. It looks like there's a lot of rock there as well, judging by the picture and the cliffs. But we'll see further down where the foundations are. It was more of a clay. Our final case study is actually about a landfill site. And the client in this situation wanted to build a tank on a site which was, just lots of household waste being dumped there and huge amounts of settlement. Did they try and do any consolidation of the site through surcharging or anything before you got there? Or was it you just tasked with, well, how can we cope with this degree of movement?
Yes, the requirement was to be able to economize the design. So when you don't have information about the existing settlement, you don't have any in situ instrumentation, you need to have some information of the existing settlements to be able to economize your design, so you don't over design, let's say. So what we did, and this is a very good example of the use of satellite technology as a desk study stage. So we use this technology to assess the existing settlements, and that provided us with information for providing reinforced soil platform solution for them to design to mitigate these settlements that were measured using the satellite technology.
Yeah, I suppose there must have been a danger and a concern that because of the huge variability in this type of material, that the settlement could sort of sharply increase at various times, and with different types of fill, it's going to behave differently. Just like the sheer inconsistency of this type of waste must be very difficult to analyze and manage.
That's why it's important to analyze a long time before. So if you analyze for many years before, you can see also the trends developing, whether there was any acceleration, and get a higher certainty by analyzing over a longer period. And also at different, you get this information at the pixel level, so you can see at different parts of the landfill how the settlements behave.
Yeah.
It's not only along one cross-section, definitely.
And then, so with the solution itself, so you had a reinforced soil platform, but was that just a temporary work solution, or was that the actual foundation for the tank?
I think that was to protect the hydrogen tank.
Yeah.
This was to mitigate the differential settlements.
Yeah.
This solution. So yes, the platform, it was a permanent solution.
Okay.
To mitigate the differential settlements within the
Did you see a lot of? I don't know if you've gone back to the client. Did you see much movement after the tank had been installed? Was it consistent with your expectations?
Yes.
Okay, fabulous. Well, I think what we've done is really illuminate some of this technology that you've got at your disposal at GFM, the use of the satellites in conjunction with the modelling techniques that you have to really show how we can understand movements and look retrospectively at movements to inform our choices about the design of geotechnical structures and the management of assets and slopes that could potentially cause a great deal of harm to infrastructure and to life. So wonderful to hear about all the great work that you're doing there, Skevi. If people are interested in getting in touch, if they've got a scheme that they want to discuss, what's the best way to reach you?
They can send us an email either at the info at so you, please log into the website www.geofm.com. So either at info or at my personal email, which is my name is as simple as skevi.perdigu@geofm.com. What I would like to say, because it's important to get information about any project, in case you might be thinking, is this technology applicable for any project? What we always do, we always do a feasibility analysis before, with no obligation, before committing to applying this. So if it's something bothering you, like, would this be applied for my case? Just reach out and we will always investigate it for you.
Wonderful. And will you be appearing at any sort of geotechnical conferences or any webinars in the next year or two?
Yes, a lot of conferences, events. I don't have the list in front of me. I've just been back from London and Canada. There are a lot to do. We do a lot of these activities and also a lot of webinars and lunch and learn sessions.
If you've got anything coming up, we'll post that along with of course the podcast on LinkedIn. Everybody can find you and learn a lot more. So
yes,
thank you so much for your time and again for the support of the podcast, and look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Thank you very, very much. It's been a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Hi again, I'm Iphigenia from GeoFem, and if you like Breaking Ground, chances are you'll also enjoy my vlog, IM News, bringing you the very latest in infrastructure asset management with a geotechnical focus. Visit geofem.com to tune in.